Maybe that's what they did, is brought yours back.
I bet that's what it is.
Here we go.
Yours is actually in a folder.
Okay, let's try that again. We're live. Let's reconvene the House Committee on Land Use for Tuesday, February 10th, 2009. We are still in a public hearing on House Bill 2229, and the record will continue. Just so that people who are here for this session understand how we'll proceed, we've taken sign-up sheets for people to testify on this bill. The purpose for this hearing is for committee members to hear your input. So you will be doing the talking. We won't be doing the talking. Committee members, I may take the chair's discretion to allow a little bit of variation on that, since we have one elected official in the room tonight to testify before us. And so if committee members want to ask questions of Councillor Robert Liberty with the Metro Council, I'll allow that, since we may not have another opportunity to visit with him on this issue. But that's if the committee has questions. We don't necessarily have to do that. People who testify will be allotted. We've been giving 2 minutes a person. We might, because the list is relatively short, have a little bit more flexibility on that tonight, but not a lot. 2 to 3 minutes to speak, to give us your suggestions on the bill. I'll invite you to the witness table in groups of three as a general rule. And when you speak, would you begin by giving us your name and your county of residence so that we have a verbal record of that as part of our committee record? With that, let's invite Councillor Liberty to the witness table first. So a bit more leeway, although, Councillor, we do have other people who are here to testify as well. So. You know. 3 to 5 minutes, if you will, please.
Glad to oblige. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the courtesy. My name is Robert Liberty. I reside in Multnomah County. I have just 3 points to make tonight about House Bill 2229, but I want to share with you the fact that I have 27 years of professional experience in the administration, implementation, and evaluation of Oregon's planning program, and that work has taken me from Portland to Ashland, Brookings to Baker County. And I've worked out at the neighborhood level, the city level, the county level, the metropolitan regional level, the state level, and actually looked at federal policy. So I'm not a newcomer to these issues. It's been my professional occupation now for going on 3 decades. I currently serve on the Metro Council. I represent 240,000 people in Multnomah County, but I'm not here to speak on behalf of the council. You will have a representative from the council appear before you on Thursday. Here are my 3 points. First, it is not true that the Oregon Planning Program has not undergone significant review and modification over the years. In fact, this document here, and I did not bring 25 copies of this, are the amendments to Oregon's planning laws. That's 1,000 pages of amendments since 1973, including 70 pages of legislation in 1993, in which a legislature considerably more conservative than this one decided to reject a proposal for secondary lands and to instead adopt the changes that are in our farm and forest zones now. So it's simply not true that it's ossified. In fact, if anything, it's shown amazing adaptability and flexibility. Second point. House Bill 2229, as currently drafted, offers you and the citizens of Oregon a pig in the poke. Why do I say that? Because on the rural land side, it creates very open-ended criteria subject to an open-ended process to allow an unknown amount of land to be rezoned for unknown amounts of development. Now, I actually have a contract looking at how sprawl is being managed in all 50 states right now as part of my consulting work. And if you want to know how that bill will play out, you only have to go to Ohio or Florida or New Jersey. You are stewards of Oregon's future. This program has really been the legislature's program since its inception. The counties have been saying for 35 years that land has been miszoned. Obviously, they know where it is. I suggest that you ask the Big Look Task Force to give the county 60 days to present to them, and then to you, maps showing all the land they wish to have rezoned in each county. and that on those maps they identify the amount of development that they would authorize, particularly rural residential, which will be the primary focus of it, and other development, and that it be accompanied by a fiscal impact statement. So the county would estimate, doesn't have to do elaborate calculations, about road construction, maintenance and operation, emergency services, and school transportation costs, and who would bear them for this development at build-out. The maps then can be forwarded to the Departments of Agriculture, Forestry, Environmental Quality, Water Resources, Fish and Wildlife, Education, and Transportation to do an impact analysis on farming, forestry, ranching, natural resources, and taxpayers. That is the way to make a reasoned decision not to approve open-ended language in a bill. And given that we've had this debate for 35 years, people ought to be ready, willing, and able to present that information to the Big Look Task Force. Third point. I think this bill could be usefully amended to ask the Department of Land Conservation Development to report back to you at the next session on the location, numbers, and impact of all the houses that have been built in farm, exclusive farm use, and forest zones since 1975. Now, how many is that? Well, I can tell you that just since 1990, 16,000 new homes have been built in exclusive farm use and forest zones, 16,000. That's enough, Representative Clem, to house everyone in your county twice over. Every 5 years, counties approve enough new houses in exclusive farm use and forest zones for a city of 12,000 people. Now, those numbers are from the reports prepared for you by the Department of Land Conservation Development. It would take a modest amount of money, and perhaps that's the wrong thing to say at this point, but a modest amount of money to have all those houses identified, located on a map, through a GIS system, and then have an evaluation done by these same departments of forestry, agriculture, fish and wildlife, water resources, to tell you what the cumulative impact is of those 25 to 40,000 new homes built in exclusive farm use and forest zones. I'm not talking about, by the way, the 700,000 acres, which is an area the size of Rhode Island, that is in rural residential zoning. That's another issue. So I think that would be a relatively straightforward amendment, and that's my testimony.
Excellent. Thank you, Counselor. Are there questions from the committee for Counselor Liberty?
Yep, yes.
Representative Greenlick.
Is your sense a Big Look Task Force is to remain in business for continuing time?
No, my suggestion is that the task force, I don't know if it still has operating funds, but that rather than, to follow up on the suggestion I made, that instead of approving criteria, considering criteria, actually look at what lands counties believe are miszoned, that they organize that effort now, but that their work would be completed at presumably the time your work is completed during this session.
Thank you. Interesting. And, Counselor, is that in your written testimony, that language?
There's not specific language. I'd be glad to provide it if that would be useful for you.
I think it would be helpful if you could, not in statute form, but just the concept in written form to Ms. Ross so that we can have it. It's an interesting notion.
Would you like that with respect to both of those proposals?
That would be great. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
And I've encouraged all witnesses who have specific proposals that are much more helpful to us than, I don't like this, but I don't like this, but I would like this better. If you can give us the better thing, rather than having us create it from scratch.
I'd be glad to oblige.
Thanks for taking the time. Yes, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Liberty, when you say analyze the cumulative impacts in farming, ranching, forestry, natural resources, taxpayers, are you referring to the value gained by counties of those properties, or are you referring to a cost issue there, or both?
Well, I think logically, Representative Hanna, you do both. However, one of the issues is that the amount of population, I think, is distributed differently, has different costs. I don't think opening up, you know, let's say 2 or 3 million acres for residential development is going to mean there'll be more houses in Oregon. They'll just be the same amount distributed differently over the landscape. So, yes, there'd be some revenue benefit. There'd also be some costs, and those things should be considered together.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time. Can I call a panel of three people, Joseph Kuhn, Corey Koos, Pete Bukat. And then the next panel will include Jerry Ritter, David Millman, and Claire Clock. Mr. Kuhn? Okay.
Chair Nolan and committee members, my name is Joe Kuhn. I reside in Marion County at 6815 Lemongrass Loop, Southeast, 97306.
Thanks.
I'm here today in response to questionnaire of six issues that was brought up by the task force on their website. And I'm not in favor of this bill. I am opposed to many things in the recommendations that they came out with. I'll briefly address the four areas in the six questions that I think are most important. And I think it's incumbent upon the state and the people who draft this legislation to bring citizens in to give their input. I think this is extremely important following goal one. I think not necessarily in order of priority, but the areas of population growth and its impact on land use. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a definite need to incorporate principles of sustainability. Oregon is supposedly on a sustainability track with a past governor having dedicated a sustainability office, and I think we need to pursue this, and this has definite impacts on growth. Also, growth paying its own way. And I think that the SDCs, systems development charges, in the areas of supporting our schools and police and fire should certainly be addressed. Another area is where to control the decisions made on land use. And I have followed the decisions made here locally in Marion County and have disagreed with many of our county commissioners' decisions on land use. And I think for obvious reasons, money and influence does weigh heavily on county decisions, and I think we need more impartial, objective decisions coming from the state. The third area, and I addressed it earlier, and that is citizens' involvement. I don't see especially ad hoc committees being established to address issues. I know that it's politicians are impatient with the slowness of citizen advisory committees, but I think that patience is necessary to pursue the democratic principles that we have in this country and to get input from the citizens and to educate the citizens in that same process. Lastly, I think the academic and intellectual addressing of property rights versus community rights is something that we need to look at strongly. And I think we all know, reading between the lines of my words, what that means. That concludes my comments, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Corey Coos.
Coos, that's correct. Right. Corey Coos, I reside in Linn County at 38155 Scravel Hill Road, Northeast, Albany 97322. I'd like to give my perspective, and it's based on my, I began being active in land use planning with Hector McPherson in the Senate Bill 100. And that was an honor, I'd like to say. And you talk about changes and what has been done. The exceptions to Goal 3 back then, I think they were minuscule. It was churches, golf courses, and, it was a very small amount. And now it's been diluted. It's, we have changed our laws. And it has made viable land use planning almost impossible because there's always an exception to the rule. I was on a planning commission in Linn County. I just was removed just recently, and I was politically incorrect in my views with what the county was standing for. And this shows to me the importance of getting above and beyond local level and having someone above looking at it with single-mindedness, someone with a leadership, with an organization with leadership qualities that has a vision like McCall did and like Hector McPherson. Also, I'm a farmer. I'm a full-time farmer. I've seen the changes at local level from a farming aspect. Things get approved quickly because it's because that's what needs to be done politically. We've had things approved where they said the water is going to be draining here, and it doesn't even drain there. We now have full-time water flowing into our fields that we never had before. It does impact us. And it's, you know, we need to protect our natural resources. And, you know, so I see that. And I also see what's acceptable. We're leapfrogging a lot on our development just because ag land is cheap and available and flat and easily developable. We deserve a right to protect our natural resources. And I think community comes first. And then as farmers, we deserve a right to be able to have our way of life, too. I did talk specifically about different issues and what in sections 1 through 3 in my testimony. But I just wanted to add what I see through my eyes. And I think it's really important that we have someone, that we have something like Big Luck, and I thank their participation and everything they've given, but we need someone like the state in there doing something to help us out on this. Thank you,
and we do have your written testimony as
yes,
well.
Yes, you do.
Thanks. Mr. Bucott?
My name is Pete Bucco. I live in Linn County at 36456 Rock Hill Drive, Lebanon, Oregon, 97355. The biggest concerns I have would be with local authorities making decisions as to what is and is not farm and forest land. They're in my county, which is the county I live in and what I can only speak to. They're beholden to special interests in that county. They have a history of making, in my opinion, would be very poor choices. They've been quoted in the paper on many occasions stating they have a responsibility to the residents of Linn County to approve all Measure 47 claims. The chair has stated that he would like to see Linn County follow the model of Redding, California, and the distribution centers of Nevada, and essentially turn our valley into a distribution center, pave it over. These are irresponsible decisions. I do not trust our local leadership to be able to make decisions that make sense for the future. You take a look at what's going on Wall Street right now, and they allowed the Wall Street executives to make decisions, and they're controlling themselves, and it's a big mess. This would be no different by allowing a county commission to make decisions on land use without any state oversight. The state has to be able to control what goes on as far as land use in this state. I'm a farmer. I also work for Costco. I'm very close to the land, and I see the kind of damage that goes on when land uses are approved. My fields are also flooding because my neighbor decided to reroute a stream, and they did it incorrectly, and I now have a swamp on the lower end of one of my fields. The commissioners approved a Measure 37 claim on 200 acres, which was supposed to be 5-acre parcels in timber, but when it was finally looked at, what was presented to them were 1-acre parcels, and they didn't bat an eye at it. And this is areas where we have elk and wildlife living. They're natural corridors for these animals to move around. We can't support the kind of infrastructure that's going to be placed out in the middle of counties, roads, police, fire, school. It's completely irresponsible. That's all I really have to say, and then you also have my written comments.
Thank you all for your testimony. We'd like to invite Jerry Ritter, David Millman, and Claire Klock to the table. And on deck, we will have Wayne Simmons, Laurel Hines, and Don Robertson. And I have noticed that a few people have come in since we started. If you'd like to testify, there is a sign-up sheet on the side table if you haven't signed up yet, and we'll collect that in a little bit. Mr. Ritter? Okay.
Good evening, Madam Chair and members. Nice to see most of you again. My name is Jerry Ritter. I reside in Lane County. I'm here representing Oregon Communities for a Voice in Annexations. We have already submitted written testimony on this legislation, which hopefully has been made a matter of record. So tonight I'm going to basically just be reinforcing that testimony. We have a few problems with this measure. Most of them are with Section 17, which mandates that all land added to a UGB be automatically annexed into a city. As written, we think that this one-sentence provision has the potential to nullify the voter annexation ordinances in our 30-plus member communities around the state. Furthermore, it is bound to create islands, and as most of you know, islands can be annexed with no vote. You've seen what happens when people are denied a voice in annexation. The resulting backlash ends up right here at 900 Court Street. It's all about fairness, ladies and gentlemen, giving those impacted by these decisions a voice in the process. That's why the legislature has overwhelmingly approved our recommendations in the last two sessions, and most of you joined us on that, and we remain very grateful for your support. That's also why citizens' rights to vote on annexation have been repeatedly upheld by this body and by Oregon's highest courts. We don't want to revisit these contentious battles, and for that reason, we will request that Section 17 be stricken from this bill, or if you let it stand, please insert language making it subject to voter annexation ordinances where they are in force, and add some protective language for the islanders who will be marooned by this process. I know it's been a long night, a long day, and I very much appreciate you folks staying over and giving us a chance to talk about this. I'd be happy to answer any questions or comments that you may have.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Millman.
Good evening, committee members. I feel like I'm piling on a bit at this point, but my name is David Millman, and I live in Yamhill County. I manage a winery in Dayton, Oregon. I also own a filbert orchard personally in Dayton and live in Dayton. I'll speak on a more anecdotal basis, of course, about my concerns about handing over rezoning capabilities to counties. You might remember 3 years ago, or just about 3 years ago, in Yamhill County, we had this luxury hotel issue where the county approved an application which required a rezoning to allow for this luxury hotel. Without revisiting those specifics, I had three basic reactions to this. One was just disappointment that the county had accepted such a low standard in approving this application. It was a very poor application at the outset, and I was disappointed that they had approved it. I was amazed in going through the process that the county had not had more tools available to it to make better decisions in terms of studies and feasibility programs and such. They were relying on information that was way out of date by their own admission, and yet they still went ahead and approved a zoning change which would have had major implications and ramifications. But finally, I was grateful. So I was disappointed and amazed, but then finally grateful that there were these layers within the system between, you know, LUBA and the Court of Appeals, State Court of Appeals, that helped hold the project to a higher standard, which the land deserves. And we all know that once you lose ag land, you never get it back. And in fact, being in the wine industry, an industry which 45 years ago didn't exist, it was unimaginable. You wouldn't have looked at the hillsides and thought that's where the value is, even though historically in other countries, like France, where they would look at the hillsides for 1,000 years and know that's where the value was. So, I think in the end, I mean, it's great to have a big look, but you need to have that big vision a vision which is, I think, often bigger than what a county may have available to it at any particular time. So that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Claire Clock.
Yeah, good evening. My name is Claire Clock. My wife and I, Reverly, reside in Multnomah County at 931 Northeast Salzman Road in Corbett. I've been farming in part full-time and part-time for the last 30 years, and I grew up working on a farm for a previous 10 years before that. In my professional life, I've dealt with land use issues and helped construct the major land use maps of the Willamette Valley, the Damascus, and the Portland metro area. I truly believe that the designations in the metro agricultural reports are correct based on the belief that farmland is valuable in the state and based on the viability of that farmland. And as a side note, it's not in my testimony, but I know that 16,000 residences has a negative effect on commercial farmland when you talk about agricultural practices. These types of designations should apply to the the designations outlined in the metro map are conflicted, important, and foundation lands. These types of designations should apply to the rest of the state. I also constructed the land use agricultural map of the Willamette Valley for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife in 1995 through 98. Anything outside of the conflicted lands should be farm, forest, or rangelands. The 1998 map should be updated to show exactly how many lands, farmlands, and forest lands have been turned to agriculture. Turned to urban lands. And that is something that I've noticed over the last 30 years of just how many exceptions actually have allowed this type of development. The land that was designated unmanaged pasture lands in the Willamette map are now some of the most productive properties in the state. The land that was designated as unmanaged, unproductive, and with poor soils is now some of the most highly valued vineyards in the wine industry. Allowing land use designations on a county-by-county basis is piecemeal and doesn't consider the integrity of the farms, wildlife connectivity, or the aesthetics values of the entire area. Any loss of farmland cuts into the security of the any loss of farmland cuts into the security of our country, and I maintain that building up and down but not out onto the foundation or important lands is really critical. If we cut any more farmland out, we'll be looking at a Los Angeles Basin type of area. Rolling hillsides with the right access design can be worked well into two-story warehouses. We don't have to have flat land. This is addressed in the Metro Regional Government Report on Industrial Land Designation in 2004. And in closing, in the 37 years of watching the process of the Oregon land use systems, I don't see turning this process over to the counties. It does not make for a seamless process. The problems outlined in the Oregon Department of Agriculture's Metro Farm Assessment Projects would be further compromised and complicated. And I thank you for your attention.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Could we bring Wayne Simmons, Laurel Hines, and Don Robertson to the witness table? And we'll have on deck Elizabeth Roser Lindsay, Mickey Killingsworth, and Larry Dyke. Wayne Simmons, please.
Thank you, Representative Chair and the committee. I appreciate the chance to speak for Hay Hospital 2229. I was trying to write it under 2 minutes, and I think I'm over, but I'm glad you're allowing me a little extra.
Okay.
So I covered several aspects of the bill. I'm Wayne Simmons. I live in Polk County on 3287 Orchard Heights Road over in West Salem. And I raise fruit and grass seed. And I'm also on the Polk County Planning Commission. I, as a little extra, I was in the Big Look video in a small part. And I also want to thank the committee for that video. I thought it was a fairly well-balanced video showing both sides. I'm concerned about how the Big Look committee came up with a summary of their study and this resulting House Bill 2229. I attended two of the traveling hearings and heard very strong and sound reasoning by citizens who have been denied most of their property rights, private property rights, by Oregonians' very restrictive land use laws. I presume you are aware that a large number of these laws were enacted by LCDC over the last 35 years through the administrative rulemaking process. A committee of seven citizens appointed by the governor with accountability to practically no one. This system has virtually stolen the property rights of landowners. Our family has had experience with this. My parents bought a long-abandoned farm in the 30s with a view but poor soils. It was for their retirement because farmers were not under Social Security then. Surrounding acres were in 10-acre plats already in the 1920s because of views and poor soils. My parents are both deceased and never realized any retirement benefits. We are still trying to divide this unfarmable land at 1,000 feet elevation into rural 5- and 10-acre parcels. When the Big Look Committee gave its early summary of their findings, the subject of giving local governments back some local control sounded promising. This on the surface indicated they had really listened to the preponderance of testimony at the statewide hearings, but when the bill was written, the ideas the committee presented did not really get put into it. Since the DLCD staff was the staff helping the Big Look Committee, I blame them for a major reason. This bill is more complicated than current law and does not in any way help to make our land use laws less complicated as had been promised. I've been on the Polk County Planning Commission since 1995, and we have not done any planning in that time, only rewriting our ordinances to comply with state demands. The regional problem-solving process in current law is being used to implement the changes by House Bill 2229. This process is not one to solve our land use law problems. It won't give any relief to older landowners who receive Measure 37 waivers because they will not live long enough. Polk County worked on a regional problem project with Yamhill County in the Grand Ronde area for several years and finally failed when the other county pulled out. Spent thousands of dollars in that process.
Are you close to concluding?
Yes,
kind of wrap it up, please.
More, yeah.
Thanks.
There are many areas that are not good soils or economically farmable, and the highest and best use should be 5 and 10-acre parcels. These parcels would bring in more property taxes through higher valuations to help our fiscally stressed counties. But going through this drawn-out regional problem-solving process with two or more counties and not using a parcel-by-parcel basis will not help anyone. Areas will never be together in large blocks, and anti-growth activists will keep any solution on appeals. Everything has to go by. Go by state rules, and all agreements meet LCD's approval. That is not local by anyone's definition. I also don't believe having two counties joining for regional definition and areas to change will not work because each county has different soils, terrain, air currents, developed areas, transportation systems, and philosophical differences. Agreements to arrive with any substantial changes will be practically non-existent, coupled with getting DLCD approval. I do not believe House Bill 229 as written will not work. A new bill is needed now, not next session. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Laurel Hines.
Hello. Good evening, Madam Chairman and committee members. Thank you for a chance to talk. And my name is Laurel Hines, and I live in Marion County. And first of all, I wanted to say that I believe that the voters stated their support for the land use system as it is by voting in Measure 49 overwhelmingly. And I won't go into detail, but I mainly submitted some written testimony on my attempts to voice my opinion on the Big Look Committee recommendations at one of their final meetings in Salem, where they had scheduled a public comment period, first in the morning, and then they changed it to the afternoon. And I went there because I was unable to go to the other meetings that were not in Salem. There was no town hall meeting set for Big Look in Salem. And when I got to give my comment, they had adjourned early, like 10 minutes early or something. They were all still in the room. I attempted to talk to the chairman because there were a few other people besides me there to testify or to give their opinion. And I was treated kind of rudely. So I gave the details in my written thing. But I wanted to touch on something that I'm not sure, since I wasn't at the other hearing, somebody might have brought this up. But where I live, there's been a lot of partitionings into smaller lots than were originally designed in a lot of areas. And I don't know if all of you remember, but there was a Curry County ruling about 10 years ago, I believe, that was against urbanization in rural areas. And that required the state to have all the hearings on Goal 14, which was the urbanization of rural areas goal, I think. And at that time, the state felt that 5-acre minimum was reasonable in rural residential areas, especially where there's groundwater limited areas and things like that. But because of all the hearings and all the opposition of some of the counties that wanted really tiny partitionings and things like that, the minimum decided on was 2 acres. And in some counties, like Marion County, that's what they settled on because they wanted as small as possible. And that has resulted in a lot of areas that have actually probably been partitioned smaller than they should be and are actually somewhat rural and are overtaxing the groundwater already. So I wanted to add that's already happened in some areas, that they may be overly dense already in some rural areas. The main thing I'm against is what many other people here have talked about, is against giving the counties the right, the ability to make decisions, because I've experienced a lot of the county decisions in Marion County. Some where they've ignored their own experts when they wanted to allow development where it maybe shouldn't be, like in groundwater limited areas. And they seem to make decisions based on politics more than science. And so that's the main thing I object to, although there are other parts of the bill that I don't like. I would like to see the current land use system exist. I think it's a good one. I think that the land use planners I've met and talked to, I know one personally, Mitch Rose, who's now retired, but they have studied the issues far more than the counties do, and I think they do a better job. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Robertson?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Don Robertson. I live in Lebanon, Linn County. When I first received House Bill 2229 and started to review it, there was one comment, overarching principle number 4, that caught my eye. Okay. It simply says, provide fairness and equity to all Oregonians. And I thought, great, we're headed the right direction. Because where I come from, I've been on a planning commission in Lebanon since about 1996. I've also been involved with land planning in one form or another since 1990, so for 19 years. And I've seen a tremendous amount of what I would consider inequities. That's why this one comment in Senate Bill 2229 caught my eye. We've had a number of situations, not just in the Lebanon area, but also in Linn County, where missed zoned properties were applied for rezoning as a non-resource land. I can think of one in particular. It was 15 acres. It was a rock pile. It was zoned farm forest. It was applied for as a non-resource property. 3 appeals and $80,000 later, he was given his request. And however, it's still not built upon the market. Didn't help him out at all. But there's a number of situations like this. I can think of another situation where a guy sits approaching $1 million that the property owner has gone through to jump through the hoops to try to get property developed that was actually given the right to initially. My concern with House Bill 2229 is that it is so laden with requirements and restrictions that it's going to implode. I can't see that it's going to help shake some of these properties loose. I know there's been a lot of concern about taking farmland out of production. I also share that concern. However, I received some numbers today from the OSU Extension Service that I'd like to share with you. My question to them was, is there a census or some type of numbers in Willamette Valley that shows what the ratio is high-dollar farmland as compared to the actual croplands that's being farmed. And this is what they sent me. This is from a National Association of Soil Scientists, Ag Census of 2002. And in this, they got Benton County, Clackamas County, Lane, Lynn, Marion, Multnomah, Polk, Washington, and Yamhill County, so the entire Willamette Valley. There is a total of 2,202,522 that's considered high-value farmland acres. Of that 2.2 million, 1,261,788 acres is considered cropland. Of that, there is only 1,002,622 acres that is harvested cropland. So it's almost a 50% ratio of high-dollar farmland as compared to that property that's actually being farmed. So one thing the committee might consider, taking these numbers into consideration, is that there be some type of program where you can give an incentive to a property owner to bring some of these properties back into production. That way, when a property owner has the ability to build on his land, we're not necessarily losing farmland, and in fact, we could be gaining farmland. Thank you for your time.
Nice suggestion. I don't think we've heard that one before. Thanks for your testimony. I'd like to invite Elizabeth Grosser-Lindsay, Mickey Killingsworth, and Larry Dyke to the witness stand. And I'd like to make sure anyone in the room who would like to testify, please sign up, because I have only one more person after this panel signed up. And that's fine. But if you want to speak, I'd like to have you on our list.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Grosser-Lindsay,
okay.
And I live on a farm in Clackamas County. We raise trees, produce, chickens, goats, and horses. When I heard of House Bill 2229, I thought it sounded like another attempt to dismantle Oregon's land use laws and another scheme for a few to get a rich at the expense of the many. These continual attempts to rewrite Oregon's land use laws are confusing and destabilizing to the rural communities because people never know what the next election or the next legislative session might bring and what the new rules might be. And so people don't know whether to make more investments in their farm or whether there's going to be development that drives them out. The purpose of our land use laws is not to create lucky millionaires like a lottery, but to ensure that the state's land needs are met and to ensure that land is planned efficiently, that the public infrastructure costs don't become a needless burden to taxpayers and due to sprawling development, and like in my area where the rural roads are deteriorating and becoming very crowded and unsafe. Last year, in a six-month period, within a mile of my home, I personally witnessed five wrecks. Two of them were three-car pileups, and in all but one of them, there were one or more people hauled off to the hospital. I actually watched a young student cut out of her car, and I think this comes from a lot of development happening in rural areas where the infrastructure is not being upgraded whatsoever because there's no money to do it. Recently, I've studied the food shed issue for the Portland metropolitan area. I determined it takes 2 acres to feed each one of us, about 0.6 acres for the crops that we eat, and the balance for pasture, since most of us are eating meat. With half of the acres arable, for the 1 million people in the Portland metropolitan region, it takes about 4 million acres to feed the urban area. This is just for the Portland area. This would take the entire Willamette Valley if we had a local food shed. With the issues of peak oil and climate change becoming increasingly recognized and even mentioned in President Obama's inaugural address, we see the need for increasing amounts of local food to reduce the amount of oil that we use, and we need to protect the farmland that it takes to feed Oregon's residents. not allow this land that we need to be lost to development. We're very fortunate to have inherited land use laws to protect farmlands in Oregon, and we need to keep them. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Ms. Killingsworth?
Good evening, Madam Chairman. I'm Mickey Killingsworth, 798 Southeast Dover Lane, Madras, Oregon. That's Central Oregon, 4 hours of snowy pass to get here tonight. I'm listened to a lot of the farmers testify tonight. I started in on this big look vision process as a stakeholder with Oregon Farm Bureau on their land use committee, and we met with their staff, and the staff had allocated an hour and a half for us. We basically locked the doors and said, you're not leaving until you hear us. And the staff did stay. They were there for over 4 hours. And they heard about agriculture in pretty good detail. Then I followed the big look hearings that were being put together, their meetings, and the dysfunctionality of the Big Look Committee, how they couldn't come together, and how I will grant the staff and Richard Whitman for bringing them together and putting lipstick on a pig. And they did that all year. And since I raise sheep, and I know about livestock, I can tell you when you're putting lipstick on something like a pig, it's quite a job. And you guys should applaud the work the staff did. And the reason I think it was so hard for everybody to come to agreement is because everybody is so diversified on that committee. But I kept thinking, okay, things are going to come out of these hearings, these work groups, whatever, something's going to come out, and they're going to listen to the people. Then I get a phone call one morning from their photographer, video production guy, and he comes knocking on my door and saying, can I interview you? So if you go look at your CD, everybody on the committee should look at the CD. It was really well prepared. They ran around the state. They interviewed different people, from myself to other farmers to planners to pro, con, whatever. It has a lot of answers, a lot of thought in there. It's well done. Then I went to the next phase with Big Look, which was go to a hearing. The hearings were never ran the same, so you never knew what you were getting to. I happened to wind up in the hearing in Burns. That was the closest one that worked for my schedule, and it was ran totally differently than my friends talked about what happened in the Dalles or what happened in the Valley. My farmer friends in the Marion County, Salem area were just livid that there was not a town hall in Salem for them. And it was felt by several people in agriculture that was intentional because they didn't want to hear the farmers. And you guys have been hearing a lot from farmers talk about protect us, save us. I'm going to wrap this up real quick because I know it's been a long day for you. But then the next phase was, at that hearing, I was given a packet. And they were packets to go around and do little mini presentations and fill out their survey. I did that. I went with several different farmers. We got together, did one group in the Valley, did two in Central Oregon. We filled them out. And the first thing that came out of everybody, it's set up. That survey was predetermined for an outcome. And that was sad. And I agree. I went through their survey, and I just couldn't believe it myself. Bottom line is, you have a system that works. You have people who voted that 60% plus of the population voted what the definition of agriculture should be. I ask you to look at that and to remember that vote and to remember how we need to protect agriculture. We also need to understand we have local control. I kept hearing everybody talking about local control. You have local control already. It works. I've been part of it for 30 years. It works. Big Look sort of tried hard, but they missed. And maybe they missed because the climate was so different and so hard than when the original Big Look happened. So as far as I'm concerned, everything now, I don't know why you guys are having the hearings. I haven't heard very many people very happy. You're doing it as a courtesy to all of us to come whine to you and tell you how unhappy we are. Cut to the chase. You guys are going to make a decision, but Big Look made an effort, and I haven't heard a big support from them from any side. And
well, thank you.
And that's that.
Okay. Mr. Dyke.
My name is Larry Dyke from Washington County. Speaking about local control, I'm not an advocate of local control. I talked to several of you earlier this evening. I'm involved in the Metro Rural Urban Reserve process, and that's going on right now up in Washington, McNomah, Clackamas County. I'm on the Washington County Reserve Committee, and I'm the only agricultural representative on the committee. There's 15 city representatives, and there's one agriculture representative. You know, in my mind, local control, if you are the control, if you are the cities and the counties, and you outnumber the agriculture, well, then I don't think local control is a good thing. I guess I'm asking you all to help that process, to provide some oversight to the rural urban reserve process. It was passed by the legislature 2 years ago, I believe, for this process, to give this process a try. Well, I think we're trying it, but I don't think to have 15 city representatives and one member from agriculture, I don't think that's a process that anyone would like. So I guess I'm not in favor of local control and asking for your help on the rural urban process. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you for being here. Looks like I have one last panel to testify, and that would include John Brown, Kristen Anderson, and Mark Peterson. That completes our sign-up list. Is there anyone else in the audience who has not signed up who wants to speak tonight? Okay, you all have the last word then. Mr. Brown?
Yes, my name is John Brown. I live in Lebanon, Linn County, Oregon. And I'm the only one here tonight that's not prepared because I just asked to come this morning. I'd like to speak real quickly to another area that may not pertain exactly to your bill, but that's if you're starting through this process. I spoke before Mr. Greenlick probably 4 years ago in Klamath Falls at the Legislative Land Use Committee. I went through, I've been in the urban growth boundary since 1980. I started to develop a piece of property. I went through LUBA. I went through Oregon Court of Appeals. I was remanded back. I'm still on the same piece of property. I'm still working on it. My latest problem you get struck with is wetlands. I had prior approval from both Army Corps of Engineers and the Division of State Lands that I had a very minimal amount of wetlands on a 70-acre parcel. I went in and started developing it. Unknown to me, I was 30 days out of compliance because when you are just out there, you don't realize that every 5 years you have to have a wetland delineation renewed. There's no way for a citizen to know those things if you haven't been through it before. So I was 31 days out of compliance. I'm out there building, so I ended up with the Army Corps of Engineers, the Division of State Lands, DEQ, everybody in God's world was on my back, and I'm still in that process. I sold a small piece in January this year, started through what they call a joint permit application. That goes to the Army Corps of Engineers, the Division of State Lands, the DEQ. They're all supposed to start working on it together. What happens? Down will come Division of State Lands after a certain length of time. They do a delineation. I've had 5 delineations done on my property. I've had soil scientists. I've hired them from out of state because you cannot get somebody in state. The people I've hired all have doctorates in soil science. They aren't a wetland specialist. They have doctorates. And so I have to feel that they know soil when they look at it. We go over the Linn County soil conservation maps that were laid out years ago. We've done all those things. I had a sale started in January. Went through the process. The guy said, you get the permits, we'll close. I went to close in October. The economy went in the tank. The guy backed out. I'm sitting there. I buy wetlands at $65,000 an acre, and now I have land that I can't even sell. So it's an area you haven't been into. But it's a real dark area. You can get all these things done, all these people want to do, and you start to develop, and somebody's ready to do something, because my land's been designated light industrial since 1980. And as far as downstream flow, the properties I put in, we have big detention basins, we have calculated flows. If these people are getting flooded out, they need to call the Army Corps of Engineers and whoever issued the permits in the beginning to go and check the flow, because you have a historic flow you can't exceed, and so there's regulations out there to take care of all those things. But meanwhile, I'll quit with that, but it's a long, convoluted process, and one of the problems we have is neither the NRCS, the DSL, or the Army Corps of Engineers, they all have their wetland specialist, but none of them necessarily accept the other's report. So you can get by one of them, and the other say, well, you know, that's good, but we're going to do this. And you want to, you have, the last permit you get is the state, which you have no, you know, nothing to do with the Army Corps of Engineers. We have the DSL and DEQ here, the Corps in the middle. You can get your DSL permit, get your Corps permit, but you still don't have your DEQ, because they won't issue, the DEQ won't issue a permit until the Corps is done. So you go through forever of these things. So that's just an area I wanted to bring up. Thank you very much.
You gave us a perspective that we haven't heard before. Thank you.
I also hope when I see you 4 years from now, you'll have the problem solved.
Well, at least 3 acres. Of it.
Ms. Anderson.
You know that, don't you?
Yeah.
My name is Kristen Anderson. I live at 124 Northwest 7th Street in Corvallis, and my thanks to the House Land Use Committee for seeking public input. I'm generally in favor of the Big Look Task Force's recommendations. I was opposed to Measure 37 because I thought it was unfair. I heard from a lot of different people who appreciated that their neighbor was able to develop, but didn't appreciate so much that they bought their 10 acres because they were under the understanding that their neighbor who lived on 10 acres would only have one house, not 10 houses going in. So I am in favor of Measure 49 generally, and I'm also in favor generally of House Bill 2229. But I have to say I oppose the wording in Section 6 and Section 7, which would allow counties to establish their own regional definition of farm and forest land. I think that having the regional definition is a solution that seeks to solve a problem that really doesn't exist. I live in Benton County, and it appears to me that if there's enough political pressure, as I heard somebody else testify earlier, that land can be rezoned from farm and forest land to rural residential land. And I've heard that over the past 20 years, an average of about 1,000 acres a year of farm and forest zone land has been redesignated as rural residential. And so I don't see that there is a problem with definitions of what's farm and forest land, because it appears to be working to the tune of approximately 1,000 acres a year. In a lot of counties, it seems like it's not that hard to get it rezoned. Also, I think that political influence is a lot greater at the county level. I know that planning departments have to respond as their planning director wishes them to, and planning directors in a lot of different places are appointed by the Board of Commissioners, and a Board of Commissioners are elected. And so I know that there is a lot of political pressure, and it is a lot easier when there's state definitions and the state is in control and your own position, whether you're the director or the Board of Commissioner, isn't at risk, if you can just say, I'm sorry, this is the state rule. And as I said, there is the other opportunity for zone changes through the process, which I do see happening quite a bit as it is. Also, what concerned me, since I do think this is a problem to have the regional definition of farm and forest land, is in Section 7, parentheses number 4, the statement there that says the Department of Land Conservation and Development shall give preference in providing grant monies, if any, to counties that seek to redefine farm and forest land. I think there's many other worthy causes out there. For an example, this gentleman just mentioned the problem he was having with wetlands. There's a lot of other worthy things out there that I think deserve a lot more funding than having counties get funding when they seek to do the regional definition. So if I mean, I'm generally in favor of HB 2229, but if you could just please reconsider that regional definition of farm and forest land. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you. Mr. Peterson.
Good evening. My name is Mark Peterson. I'm with, from Corvallis, 977 Northwest Cypress in Corvallis. And while I think many of the proposals in this bill are sound, I'm asking you to oppose specifically 6 and 7. Anything that can open the door to more homes in rural areas isn't sound planning. It's not broken. The land use process isn't broken currently. And I'm unclear as to what the principal drivers were to how this was crafted. But what is clear is that the proposed language has the potential to allow for more homes to be constructed outside of cities and away from typical city services. Building homes in rural areas negatively impacts the environment, has an impact on water, air quality. Our local government's forced to invest many dollars once areas build up with homes. These farm-to-market roads aren't straight enough, or they're too curvy, and we're out there, or people are out there fixing them. But anyway, building homes in the rural areas has that negative impact. A patch or corner of unproductive land on large farms, it's unfortunate. Building homes on these areas isn't a sensible solution to that, though. So thanks for considering that. And again, thanks.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Members and members of the public, I want to add three other letters to the public record, copies of which have been distributed to you, and I want to just make note of them. We received a letter from the League of Women Voters of Oregon dated November 21st, which addresses specific sections of House Bill, legislative concept 660709, which became House Bill 2229. We also received a letter from the League of Women Voters of Oregon dated February 10th, specifically on House Bill 2229. And we received a letter, written testimony from the Sierra Club, from Mr. Molesky, who had signed up to testify but was trying to clone himself and be in two committees and didn't make it to our record. So I'll note that for the record. With that information, I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2229. Colleagues, a couple other pieces of information. On Thursday, you will note that we have a committee hearing. We have two bills posted for work session. One is House Bill 2375. I have an amendment in drafting before the in Legislative Council. I'm expecting that we will receive it by then to address taking out one section that would require immediate removal of any non-conforming uses, but adding language that makes it clear that non-conforming uses have to abide by a pretty tight constraint. And I'll have that amendment for you to look at as soon as we can get it. And we've also requested a fiscal impact statement so that we'll be able to look at that bill in work session. We also have this bill posted for work session on Thursday, and I would like to ask members of the committee to identify if there are sections of this bill that you can support as submitted, as in the original draft, or if there are sections that you would like to see the committee work on making amendments to, and that's going to be a bit of a complicated process, but I'd like to start identifying where there may be some areas of common consensus on the committee and where we need to put our attention to making some amendments. Representative Freeman?
Madam Chair, I have asked for an amendment to delete Section 17. Right? Since that's all it says, it should be an easy one to...
Is that right. Annexation?
Annexation.
Oh, yeah, I did too.
This explains why I would prefer that amendments come through, I know, through
sorry
the administrator,
that.
Because LC, Legislative Council, for those in the audience, is up to its eyeballs and then some in drafting original bills for all of us. So let's try to coordinate it and minimize the burden we're putting on LC. The other last announcement I will make tonight is that after conferring with all the members, we have scheduled a public hearing in Central Oregon on Saturday the 28th to hear testimony on bills relating to destination resorts, the Metolius Basin, and areas of critical concern designation. We don't have the exact location yet. We had some conflict among the committee members about the precise timing of that. We're looking at a hearing that will probably run for about 2.5 hours mid-morning on Saturday the 28th.
We get time to drive there from here.
Well, we'll have to wake up. Anyone driving over the mountains will have to leave relatively early to get there. We will be in touch with you about the exact logistics for that, but I wanted to make sure you did know that that's been confirmed. And we have invited the Senate Energy and Environment Committee to join us if they'd like, and we'll also invite local legislators to attend if they'd like to attend as well, even if they don't sit on the committee.
And Representative Madam Chair, Hannah? What community?
We don't know exactly. The commission is holding hearings on similar issues already in Sisters and Madras.
What commission is it?
Land Conservation and Development Commission. So I'm inclined to look at either Bend or Redmond as the location so that other nearby communities have access to policymakers. Representative Klem?
On two things. So I just wanted to, what you just alerted people to, if you want to go to an area of critical concern only deal, I'm driving out there tomorrow to listen to it if anyone wants to carpool. The destination resort hearing that LCDC and House Ag held in October was in Prineville. So Prineville's also had 200 people come to one of these already. Pal Butte didn't have any yet. I think they would love one. As far as I know, Bend hasn't had any. So yeah, there's some other history on this for Cheyenne to know about in terms of some communities have already had a one on the exact topics that are covered or will by the time we get there. The second thing, if I might, is just a reminder that the people who served on the Big Look Task Force were volunteers who took a countless number of hours away from their lives to try and come up with something that this legislature has been unable to do for a long time. And I understand that people want to thank the staff and people want to thank the people who went, but those task force members are in one heck of a difficult situation like all of us are, and they're not even getting paid our meager legislative salaries in per diem. So I just think it's important to remember.
That is a very good reminder. Any other comments? Seeing none, we will adjourn for the night. See you all on Thursday.